Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast, second and a half edition of the NLDS. I'm Jacob Birch, Eric Steven. Why are we doing a Game 5 podcast? This was supposed to be over.
I can't believe the 2017 World Series participant who led their league in wins is forced to a Game 5 against a wild card winner. Can you believe that?
Me neither.
That's right. We're talking Astros after the break.
Doing our little ditty. So we've got sort of a lot to cover. The games were so similar, just with roles reversed. We'll see how long we go into that. We're going to look into Game 5, what should be, regardless of the outcome, a really exciting day of baseball. All that after this.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This series, and a lot of the playoff baseballs, maybe outside of the Yankees-Twins series so far this year, has really been pitching dominant. It's been a lot of low scoring, very close, very tight games, and that's been, I think, really true in this Dodgers series. Maybe game one's sort of an aberration, but even then, not really. Outside of in these last two games, two big innings, one for the Dodgers and one for the Nationals.
Yeah, the both games in Washington were like sort of hinged on a big inning. You know, if you look at it, like the Dodgers went into Washington, right? Like, oh man, they all of a sudden, the Nationals got their split. So if they win both games, they could eliminate the Dodgers. And like Strasburg looked dominant. You know, the Dodgers are going to have to face Scherzer one of those games. They ended up pushing Scherzer from game three to game four just to give him that extra rest, because Anibal Sanchez was going to start one of those two games anyway. So, and Scherzer had pitched in relief in game two. and then, like right after Strasburg, Anibal Sanchez strikes out 9 in 5 innings and gives up one run.
With this Ethis curve that they talked a lot about on the broadcast, it just looked unhittable. Up there, go get it.
And like, so at that point, the Dodgers were trailing 2-1 in the sixth, and like you're thinking, man, this is how. Like we talked to this like so many times, like, how can the Dodgers lose in the playoffs? Like, well, they could run into the Nationals or the hot pitching staff or something like that. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh man, this is not good for them. And then like, okay, to top it all off, this is the Nationals who in the wild card game used Steven Strasburg in relief. In the Strasburg game, they used Scherzer in relief. And then they bring Patrick Corbin in relief in game three. And like he did a really good job outside of the four walks in the first, game one, of like limiting the Dodgers that night too. So like oh man, all of a sudden you're like, if the Nationals can like somehow create a thing where their four starters pitch like almost all the innings, like that's a tough formula to beat, right? And then it just all like crumbled, like on the Nationals. Like it shows you how like difficult pitching in relief is for someone who doesn't do it a ton. And like, so the Dodgers, the ultimate rally that inning was, it was a 7-run rally.
Almost all the production on two outs. So Bellinger got on with no outs. And
yeah,
then
all the runs scored with two outs, yep. But like they started it. And then, you know, we talked about like Cody Bellinger, like not, he couldn't do anything. So like he was 0-for-2 in game three to start game three with a strikeout. So he's 0-for-8 at this point in the series. And then like he got a 2-strike single off Corbin to lead off the sixth. And then later in the inning, Russell Martin, 2-run double, also with 2 strikes. Kike Hernandez, 2-run double. This was the, we talk about like these little sort of managerial things. Like David Martinez left Corbin in too long at this point. The game was getting away from him. So it's 3-2. Kike like mashes left-handers. It's what he does. And like they left Corbin in too long. Another 2-strike hit, got a 2-run double to make it at that point, what is it, 5-2? And then they pulled Corbin out, brought in Suero, and then Justin Turner lowered the boom and hit a 3-run home run to sort of put the game away at that point. So the Dodgers have never scored 7 runs in an inning before. So that was a very productive inning for them. And then, like, we saw, you know, almost not quite as prolific an inning, but like one big blow and one long inning that sort of murdered the Dodgers like in the next day.
Let's go over that inning a little bit, because there's a lot on sort of either with Twitter or a lot on sports radio. Not that I really listen to that all that much, but I saw sort of clips going around kind of over maybe the pitching decisions and how that inning kind of unfolded. So we had Rich Hill starting, and take us into that. You and I were talking before we went at all. You think Rich Hill was left in too late, excuse me.
By a batter. Like, so, you know, we've seen Rich Hill start, when he's normally healthy, like he'll be, you know, going, rolling along. And then all of a sudden he like walks two guys. And then it's like, he gives up 2 or 3 runs really quickly. That just kind of happens a lot. And so they were hoping to get 4 innings out of it. But in the second inning, he was a little wild. He went walk, strikeout, single, walk. And then he nearly gave up a grand slam to Anthony Rendon. There's been a few balls in this series, man, like that were absolutely crushed. And then you're like, oh, I just got caught in the warning trap. Like it was asked a couple times, like during some of the pregame stuff, like, hey, do you think the balls are like, I think Andy McCullough asked.
We've got a question from Craig about this later in the podcast.
Yeah. And so like, I honestly haven't looked at the numbers on it, but like, yeah, it does seem like the ball's dying like it did not do in the regular season. But so Anthony Rendon settled for the sacrifice fly. So it's 1-1 at this point in the third inning. And then so you have Juan Soto up. Adam Kolarik exists to pitch to Juan Soto. I know it's only the third inning, but it's like a huge sort of point in the game. Rich Hill also left-handed, so I get it. But at this point, he was, you know, wild all over the place, nearly gave up a grand slam. And then he ended up walking Soto as well to load the bases again, and then that's when he was brought out. I would have preferred to see Kolarik at that point, but I get it. While you don't want to maybe use that guy in the third inning, so Kenta Maeda was brought in, did his usual sort of face a slew of righties, went through the bottom of the order. He faced 5 batters going through the fourth, so it's still 1-1. I think I tweeted at someone after that third inning, like, I can't believe this game's only 1-1 still. Like, it felt like the Nationals should have been up like 4-1 or something, mm-hmm. Just the way they were threatening. And then, so their big inning came in the fifth. So they took, okay, so first of all, Kenta Maeda, he faced 5 batters. And then the Dodgers sent 4 to the plate in the fourth. Like when they brought Maeda in, technically you could have done a double switch if you wanted to sort of have Maeda go longer. But I think the way they've used Maeda, like they're going to use him a lot. And like, so I don't think he's going to be like a 3-inning guy or a 4-inning guy or something.
And he had pitched the night before.
Right. So five batters, that's his limit. So his spot's coming up in the fifth, and I saw a lot of after the fact stuff on this, like, why did they take Maeda? It's like, well, they needed offense for one thing, like that. So you have to pinch hit for him. Now, I guess the argument there, because we can talk about this, because they sent AJ Pollock. So we can talk about this. AJ Pollock did not start game four because he was really bad.
Was,
right, and so he struck out again, this time on five pitches. And so far in the series, 0 for 12, 10 strikeouts, really bad. So they bring in Urias, who had only pitched back-to-back twice in September. Not, you know, we've talked about this before. He's really a starter, but they're it's like one of these years he's going to get 100 innings, you know, and just see what he could do. But, like, not this year. But, like, he's not at the point where he could pitch back-to-back days, like, or often and be effective. So he faced five batters, gave up three hits, and I think one of the outs was a sacrifice. It was like a weird, like, almost bunting, trying to bunt for a hit / sacrifice that weirdly kicked back fair. It was an odd play. So, like, you could argue there that Roberts left him in a little too long, but I get it. Like, Urias isn't a handedness guy, so, like, he could really face right and left-handers, but he also has to be effective, and I don't think he was very effective. Then they bring in Pedro Baez with two runners on, so the Nationals had already scored one off Urias to take the lead. And then Ryan Zimmerman came in, and he's probably more – maybe a bigger impact, I think, with the Nationals, but he's like their Andre Ethier, I think, at this point. Like, last year of a deal, this is sort of his last hurrah with his, like, original team. And he hit just a titanic home run to sort of put the game away.
Pitch was really, really high. I think they said it was the highest home run the Nationals hit all year. Just really up in the zone. Like, I don't think it was a bad pitch. Like, I think that this was a chase this. You can't actually hit it even far, even if you hit it. But, boy, was that incorrect.
Yeah, and so, like, the Dodgers were playing catch-up at that point. Anthony Rendon hit another sacrifice fly the next inning, so it's 6-1. And then the Dodgers are just sort of Scherzer. Oh, the other thing in this game I forgot to mention during that whole whether Maeda was coming out again. So after the bottom of the fourth, it was pouring. Right, like it was Scherzer batted to end the fourth inning. Like, they were showing, like, on it, the water was, like, dripping off of his batting helmet. Like, it was just absolutely pouring there. And from a Dodger perspective, you're thinking, if there's a long rain delay, this is great, because, like, the Dodgers, it's already a bullpen game for the Dodgers.
Scherzer had come out in game one looking like maybe the fastball was a little too straight. And they were hitting it fairly hard, hitting a lot of balls in the air, including Justin Turner's home run. But right around this third and fourth inning, you could tell he was becoming Scherzer. And get this guy out of here.
Yeah, so it's like if the rain was happening then, because it looked like, man, we're going to see a pretty big delay. And if you get a big delay, you take Scherzer out, or at least limit him so he doesn't pitch deep, and then you have a better chance. But then, like, you come back in the fifth inning, and it's, like, dry. You're like, oh, it's not raining anymore. Like, and then he struck out the side that inning, and then, like, he retired, like, seven straight into the seventh. So the Dodgers are sort of in a rough spot. So the seventh, the Dodgers did actually rally against Scherzer. They had a single and two walks. they started three rookies in this game. They hadn't done that since, like, the 2016 NLCS. Andrew Tolles is one of those three rookies. It was Seager, Tolles, and Urias. It's pretty rare, I think, for the Dodgers to start three rookies in a playoff game. But the three rookies were the ones on base in the seventh, Matt Beatty, Gavin Lux, Will Smith. And then this is sort of a big spot in the game. This was, like, the key two-batter stretch. The Dodgers are down 6-1 at this point, so a hard comeback road, but this is sort of their chance. And Chris Taylor was sent to pinch hit, you know, not David Freese. And Taylor had a really good at bat. It was eight pitches. But then the eighth pitch was like a hanger, man. And he swung right through it and struck out. And then Jock Peterson came up and hit a ball down the right field line. that looked like a bases clearing double, but it was like maybe like an inch foul. It was so close to hitting chalk, but it wasn't. And he ended up grounding out on the next pitch. So like they went from like big run scoring opportunity to get back into the game to pure deflation. Max Scherzer completing seven innings, down 6-1, and then that ended up being the final. It was a rough go. I think there was another. Oh yeah, in the eighth, Max Muncy hit Sean Doolittle. He hit a fly ball. I think Statcast said it had a 91% chance of being a hit, and he absolutely crushed the ball, and it just absolutely died like on the track in center. And like Doolittle's face was like he was smiling because it was like that Ross Stripling from the 2017 World Series where he just knew it was gone, but it didn't go out somehow. Like it was one of those like, hey, well, I got away with that. Cool. Like, that was sort of the state of the Dodgers night in game four. So we're tied back to LA.
Yeah. And just real quick, I wanted to make one thing clear is that it's interesting with both games, like score wise, blowouts from each side. But I think both fan bases would agree in the game that they lost, it never felt done. In game three, the Dodgers were up by whatever it was, I guess six at that point. Joe Kelly comes in and just looks like Joe Kelly of April, just loads the bases, hard hits, walks. The fastball looked like it had life, like the stuff looked good, and he just couldn't locate it effectively or anywhere he wanted it. And so this whole time, like, nothing is easy. Why is it never, ever easy? And things did get a little bit easier and fun after that. But there were tense moments throughout, even though the run differential were 5-6 runs most of the game.
So Joe Kelly, he faced four batters in game three. It was 8-2, and it became 8-4 after his inning. But he didn't retire a batter. He walked three. So he set a Dodger record for most walks without recording it out in a postseason game. So
congrats,
I guess, yeah.
So you've got some numbers for us. We went into this series beating, it's going to be the Nationals starters versus everyone else. And that's really, really held up. And I think you have some numbers for us behind that.
Yeah, so the Nationals especially, because if you look at it, like the Dodgers had a bullpen game basically in game four, so they didn't get as good of an outing or long of an outing from Rich Hill as, like, say, the Nationals did. But the Nationals have basically gotten a good start, a winnable start, like all four games. So they're at 5 runs in 24 innings for their starters. And the Dodgers are at 6 runs in 19 and two-thirds innings. Very effective. Not quite as effective as the Nationals. Bueller was the 6th scoreless, so the others are sort of playing catch-up there. They've walked 10. Rich Hill had 4 of those walks in his short outing. So, like, Bueller's doing the heavy lifting, and he's going to be in Game 5. But then the relief, oh, God. Nationals relief pitching, including Patrick Corbin, who gave up 6 runs in relief. He's technically a starter, but I'm counting this as a relief outing because it was 14 runs in 11 innings for the Nationals. For the Dodgers, it's better, but still bad. 8 runs in 15 and a third innings. So the key to this series is get into that bullpen and just go nuts, you know. And that's why, like, this game 5 is going to be important because you have the team's like 2 best hottest starters, and so, like, yeah, it's going to be.
I'm not a big fan of the term must-win game, but I'm going to go on a limb here. I think Game 5 is a must-win game for the Dodgers.
I'll think about it. You know what? By the fourth inning, I might agree with you.
Well, we're going to talk about a few hitters after a commercial break, and then I promise this, and I came through. I have some questions from Craig that we're going to talk to right after we talk about Game 5. Ready for this?
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com. Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets.
I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
When we last recorded, we called out three hitters because I think Seager was sort of in this equation. But the two that really stuck out to us as after the first few games really need to show up were Cody Bellinger and AJ Pollock. And this is a tale of two different hitters here.
Yeah, we talked about Pollock. So
Cody Bellinger pace update anymore. It's really kind of a bummer.
Yeah, I'll go to Pollock first because Matt Beatty started in game four.
For a reason.
I think Roberts was asked today. He said we're still considering what's going on. Despite his numbers against Strasburg, I don't think he's going to start in game five. Pollock, I think they're going to bench him again because he's too far gone at
this
the plate.
This is a situation though, where because of his history.
Yeah,
I would be more okay with him pitching early here than in game four. And this is a thing where the Dodgers operation, the front office, has so much more numbers and data and analytics behind this than I do. So if they think that's a good call, you could talk me into it, I think. But I certainly wouldn't start him.
Yeah, and so I think that's the situation. So he's 0 for 12, 10 strikeouts. Dave Roberts mentioned, I believe this was before game four, a few of his quotes were he's having trouble with the spin right now, and like we saw in game two, that was like Steven Strasburg's game. Changeup, curveball was killing the Dodgers. Like they were chasing everything. He mentioned more chase than usual for Pollock. Look, he was really good when he came back after the All-Star break. He slugged over 500 in the second half.
Had like a mini slump there, kind of at end of August, but then came back and hit really well in September.
Good
like
overall.
Good
overall numbers against lefties, like all year. So, like, useful player. Strasburg's obviously not a lefty, but like, he's a useful player. Like, but I just think the way he's going, you really can't start him. And it doesn't have to be like Matt Beatty again. You could do some sort of hybrid of Chris Taylor or Kike or like. Honestly, if they wanted to sit Lux, that's on the table too.
Sure.
Because if maybe they want to get Freeze in there, and it's as simple as putting Muncy at second and Freeze at first. Maybe it's Matt Beatty in left, or maybe it's Chris Taylor in left, or maybe you want Kike's defense. I don't know, but like they have options. But like for sure, I would say Pollock's probably not going to start. But Bellinger, like I said, he got to 0 for 8 when he hit that single, and then that started sort of a little mini run here. He hit a double his next at bat. It was 112 miles an hour for the bat. That was a solid hit. He had a flyout his next at bat, but it was like 100 mile an hour off the bat. So he's starting to hit the ball hard. That was a thing.
He flew out later. Like a lot of these early at bats, like he was fouling pitches.
Right?
Yeah, he was swinging and missing a lot.
He had 110 mile an hour single against Scherzer, and then a 95 mile an hour flyout. Like wasn't like a for sure hit, but the fact that he's just hitting it hard and hitting it. Positive sign, I think, and like one that you hope will sort of for him that you hope it'll sort of continue. So I think that's a positive sign. Seager had a double in one of the games, not totally out of it yet, but like sort of getting there. And we talked about how like Pollock batted third in game two, and Seager and Muncy were like fifth and seventh, and Muncy's been hitting second the last two games, and Seager fifth. So I think that's where they sort of need to be at this point.
You mentioned Muncy. Muncy and Justin Turner are the heroes of this offense so far in this series.
Absolutely. Like Muncy, he did most of his damage in the first two games. And then Turner, he's homered in the last two. He's most of the last 3 weeks of the season, he was hurt. Barely played. He had an ankle thing, and then he had a back. And he's 6 for 18, 2 homers, 2 doubles so far. He's got right now he's third all time in postseason Dodger history in home runs with 9. Garvey has 10. Snyder has 11. Yes, Snyder's were all in the World Series. Yeah, Turner's played more games than Garvey, but look, it's still impressive. He has more doubles than any Dodger in postseason history. I was laughing at this because, like, the NLDS specifically, so this is the fifth straight year for Turner playing. Well, I guess sixth straight year. He was 0 for 2 in the 2014 NLDS because he wasn't quite a starter yet. In his NLDS with the Dodgers, 96 plate appearances. He's hitting .407, .490 on base, .691 slugging, 20 RBIs in those 23 games, 9 doubles, 4 home runs, and a triple. So I forgot he also stole a base in this series. He's 5 for 5 in his career in the postseason stealing bases. So he's sort of their Mr. October at this point.
We kind of talked about Imogen Lux might sit. We expect Pollock to probably sit, maybe to get David Freese in there. Another sort of let's get a veteran presence in and lower the rookie presence discussion I've seen involves the catcher. And maybe earned, because Russell Martin had a hell of a game 3, a really cool moment for such a, you know, return Dodger, long-term Grover Cleveland Dodger, I think John Weissman calls them.
He's nice, yeah.
But at the same time, Dave Roberts came out to answer that question before he gets out there. Will Smith is starting Game 5. That's happening.
Yes. Yeah.
Are you okay with that? Did you have any thoughts that maybe Russell Martin should be starting this Game 5?
No, because Will Smith hasn't looked like lost at the plate. He's 1 for 9 in the series, but he has 3 walks, and like he's been like in at bats, you know, like so. And he slumped in September, but still overall, he's a better hitter than Russell Martin, and he does fine behind the plate. I want to say this. Russell Martin had one of the great games by a Dodger catcher in postseason history as he homered later in the game. So I just thought this was funny. So he's 2 for 4 in game 3. Home run, double, 4 RBIs. So in the entire 2018 postseason, Austin Barnes and Yasmani Grandal combined for 66 plate appearances. They also had 2 extra base hits, and they drove in 3 runs. So Russell Martin in his one game outproduced the entire Dodger catching contingent last year. In the 2017 postseason, the same duo, maybe a little bit different of a split of playing time, 63 plate appearances. They had 3 extra base hits and 5 RBIs. So they were slightly better than Russell Martin's single
Russell's
game.
Russell's got to start this game to catch up to 2017.
Yeah, but so that's
well,
the thing.
One pinch hit, I guess, and all of a sudden he's tied at least. So
Russell Martin, bottom line, he slugged .330 this year, right? So he had a nice game, but he's a backup catcher, and that's what you want your backup catcher to do. He's probably going to start the next time Ryu starts, or he's retired. Because game 5 is...
And there are some murmurings of, like, doesn't he do better? Doesn't Walker Buehler do better with Russell Martin? And the answer is no. I didn't look
at... They barely...
This. Yeah.
Yeah, they barely paired up.
Yeah.
It was mostly Austin Barnes, actually. But, like, look, I think it was a nice story, but, like...
Do you think Austin Barnes is coming in the game 5?
You know what? We're going to see an email tomorrow. Injury replacement. That would
AJ
be a
Pollock.
Fun story. AJ Pollock for Austin Barnes. And then Austin Barnes like homers. So Russell Martin's last 2 extra base hit game was September 2017. This is rare. I think you just accept it and hope he does something positive the next time he plays. And, you know, okay with him pinch hitting or something late in the game. But, like, Will Smith's your catcher. You got to run with it until he proves otherwise, and so I think it's fine that Will Smith has started.
I'm gonna change things up just a little bit. Let's end on thoughts about Game 5.
Yep.
Excuse me, including your predictions. And let's do some
questions from Craig.
I have to let our editor Brian know that my mother loves the questions from Craig jingle. So
nice.
Congrats!
I think I heard her say that in person.
You did,
at Dodger Stadium, so that was cool.
I think she was pointing out to you the Ryu home run mistake. So.
Yeah. She's like, "Hey, idiot!" It was weird that she called.
Yeah.
No, she wouldn't have said that. She's too nice.
She's a straight shooter.
That's right.
First question. It's a pretty small sample size, but do you think the postseason version of the baseball of 2019 is different than the regular season version of the baseball in 2019? Talked about this a little bit before. It kind of looks like, now, it's also colder, Eric, and you know that that can affect things too. But it, I saw, and I don't know who it is. I did see a tweet that said, like, the fact that we can't determine for sure because Major League Baseball just won't say anything is infuriating.
Yeah. Right. They can just be like, oh, I don't know, maybe. It isn't.
A little wink.
Yeah. Let's get this scientist to explain it. Anecdotally, yes, it does seem like these balls are dying, like, at a much earlier spot than they were before. Like, so I get it. I haven't looked at the numbers. You have to remember, like you say, it's colder. The pitching staffs are condensed. So, and you're facing better pitchers more often. Although we've seen like that doesn't matter. Like Justin Verlander pitched on 3 days rest tonight and gave up 2 home runs. Dallas Keuchel gave up 3 home runs in his start. So like it happened. So, I will give you a quick number here just because I just pulled it up. So 27, 34, 36, 39, 43. So we had 46. There's been 46 total home runs in the postseason so far. And this is just riveting. 31, 34. So we're in 36 games. So that's 1.28 per team game. So in that, in the season, it was, I think, 1.40 or 1.39. That said, it's a little lower than, but that's also the 1.28 would be the would have set the record for most home runs. The previous record was 1.26 2 years ago. So maybe anecdotally, yes, it does seem like, but maybe it seems like these are isolated cases. And overall, we're still basically seeing a shitload of home runs.
Bob Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone is considered to be a rock classic. I believe Eric is a Dylan fan. True or false?
Yep. Yeah.
I've always wondered, as someone who has probably didn't hear Dylan until after 20 years or so of his early work, how you became a Dylan fan.
It was actually like 30 years after like his work, because a friend of mine from high school, this was much after college, he would always try to sort of steer me into Dylan. Hey, you got to listen to this. You got to listen to this. And I finally relented, and I really liked a lot of his older stuff. Like he had this period of like 63 to 66, where I think he released like 5 albums and they're all great. I love them all. And, that's like my peak Dylan. He did some stuff in between there for the next like decade or so, off and on. 1975 was Blood on the Tracks, which has Tangled Up in Blue on it and other stuff. He's had a few like quote unquote hits, or I guess popular songs. He never really is a chart guy. So, but for me, like it's a simple thing. Like anything after Blood on the Tracks, I hate. Like it's just, for one thing, his voice hasn't aged well. So like some of his newer records, like he's won Grammys and stuff in like the 2000s. And I think Time Out of Mind is one of the albums, and I just couldn't get into him. Don't like it as much. I like the old Dylan and that's about it. But I like it a lot. Like it's like a top five for me, like artist. And, all that sort of 60s and like basically, I already forgot the name of the Blood on the Tracks. Basically, that period is it for me.
And he adds, if my music fandom has continued in my life, or as it changed as I got older, I just think of expanded sort of genre. I'll listen to, I think, anything at this point.
Yeah.
Up until I was 13, I listened to nothing but KRF-101, and I still listen to Apple Music's 60s pop. PlayStation, yeah. A lot. So I certainly haven't ditched anything, but I've just added on since then.
So the best part for me, I listen to KRF-101 now. because it's
almost depressing to me.
it's like 80s and 90s and a little bit of 70s, and it's like, here's the oldies. I'm like, oh, but I like that music. It's like, that was when I was
bums me out, because and that's fine, whatever, that happens, you know, as you age, but it's like, I like 60s music, and I wish I had a 60s radio station.
With
the real Don Steele, Big Kahuna Christmas giveaways. Yeah.
And so for me, that's a question. Like, I, 80s is my favorite, but there's a lot of 90s stuff I like too, because I was a teenager. And I listened to a lot of rap, like, through high school and most of college. I haven't listened to as much rap, I think, in the last, like, 20 years. So I'm, like, way behind on it. I just don't know as much.
We'll have a music episode in the off season come November, where I'll throw some stuff your way.
But I'm pretty stuck on. I could just sort of live with the 80s and 90s and like old Dylan, and I'm good.
Yeah, we'll work on that.
Exactly.
Only three questions today, so the last question is a food question. Let's say you're looking to grab something to eat at a place you've never been to before, but it's something like an airport restaurant or maybe a roadside diner. I think the idea here is quality of suspect. The menu has burgers, sandwiches, salads, and let's say all-day breakfast. What do you order?
So I think this depends on the time of day for me. I could eat breakfast at almost any time, but I think if I'm out like that, if it's morning, I'm getting breakfast. But I think any time, if it's like after 10 p.m., I'm okay with like getting breakfast then too. But I think any other time, I'm probably getting like a burger. It's probably something quicker, so maybe a burger. I would probably entertain a salad there.
Can't do salad. That's an immediate, like, just the lettuce they're going to use is probably so bad.
Yeah.
A bunch of iceberg. Not a fan.
That's true. And, like, the dressing's probably terrible. Yeah. Like,
And I have found that a lot of times the burgers in these places I don't really like, and that's just kind of a waste of kind of a trash meal. What I found more consistent, still very much a trash meal, is I'm looking for like a Philly cheesesteak, something like that. Like, it's just so easy to just put some ribeye, not ribeye, but, you know, put some sort of steak on a grill, throw some onions on there, and the onions and the cheese just masks any quality issue. And if I can sniff out that the place is probably actually pretty good, I'll get something else, something that looks, you know, maybe their specialty. But if it's untrustworthy, I'm looking for a Philly.
You could literally sniff out if you smell something good, then it's eat there. I just want to go back to the home runs thing. The Dodgers, the Dodgers have 7 home runs. The only team with more are the Tampa Bay Rays. And I just realized MLB already updated with tonight's game, so they had the correct number in there already. So we are at 43 home runs instead of 46, I believe I said, and that is 25, 26, 31, 34 games. So the actual number is 1.265, which is essentially where we were in 2017, which was the previous record. So still a lot of home runs.
Okay. So here we are, game 5. Mm-hmm. I think looking ahead to games isn't worth talking too much about, especially in a game 5 where we've seen these pitchers before. We don't need to tell you who Stephen Strasburg is or how good he is in the playoffs and how good he has been against the Dodgers. We've kind of already hatched that out. How are you feeling? As a Dodger fan, not just a sports journalist, how confident are you feeling? I'll go on the record and say I think on paper, my head is very much, this is a very even game. Both excellent pitchers. Maybe Strasburg's a little bit more reliable, but the Dodgers' offense is more reliable. And should they leave, even if they pitch great 7-8 innings games, that's at least an inning or two the bullpen has to pitch. And that's clearly in the Dodgers' favor, even if the numbers so far have been a little wishy-washy. That said, I'm afraid. And maybe that's just my emotions taking over, but...
Yeah, like, you go into it, right? So they're anytime, and it's not, I'm not trying to take anything away from the players, like, agency in this, but, like, it's essentially a coin flip, right? The Dodgers have the advantage of being at home. They do have the better bullpen, and they have their best pitcher against the Nationals' best pitcher right now, I think, because especially you look at where Scherzer's been, like, after he's come back, he's still really good. But, like, so the two starters are, I think, pretty evenly matched. The Dodgers are at home, so they have the advantage. But yeah, it's really just a matter of who can get into the bullpen first. Like, there's a couple things. Like, I I'm apprehensive. I do think it's almost a 50-50 game. But I think the Dodgers have a slight advantage. And it's really just comes down to being at home. But, like, I will say this. It's all hands on deck, basically, you know, behind Bueller. Roberts mentioned, like, piggybacking with Kershaw. Like, honestly, like, the only role for me that, like, makes sense in terms of good for the Dodgers standpoint is, like, if Kershaw is pitching an inning and it's, like, the eighth or something.
I could see him going maybe a little bit more, especially if it's a, like, medium leverage situation. Dodgers have a 2-3 run lead and he just kind of has to bridge, but...
I guess, but like,
I wouldn't go more than two. I wouldn't go more than two. And that's only if that first inning was kind of clean. Maybe he let one guy on base and that was it.
Yeah, because then you look at it like, why is it that way? Is it like, did Bueller have to leave in a 1-1 game in the sixth or something? And
well,
like,
I mean, I think it could look a lot like his game one, right? Dominant, but maybe a little too nibbly, wasted a lot of pitches.
So I think they have to make Strasburg get a lot of pitches. But yeah, like, if it's a situation where Bueller falters and he has to be pulled after four because the Dodgers are down like 4-1, then it's a trouble because then you're asking Kershaw to basically, it's like basically game seven of the World Series again, where like Kershaw comes in, does really well, and then, but then like the Dodgers offense, you know, doesn't come in. Like that's a weird situation. Like, but like, yeah, like you said, overall, Dodgers probably have a slight advantage, but it is like, the season could very well end tomorrow. It's funny because the Astros are in the same boat, although they have a little bit better advantage because Cole's been like better than anybody, but pretty much Garrett Cole. But they're in the same boat. They have to play the Rays in Game 5 on Thursday. So yeah, it's going to be weird. I'll say this: I finally got around. I'm traveling for at least for a couple games in the World Series, and as of right now, like the only like the I figured. If it's the Astros, they're clearly starting at home. So, like, I finished finally booking my travel today for Houston. And then they go out and not close out the series tonight. So, I think I put in our Slack at work, I said, well, I booked my travel to Houston. Congratulations to the Yankees on making the World Series. Because I was sort of waiting because, like, the Dodgers could play the Yankees and have home field advantage. So, I have to keep my options open there. And like, but if the Dodgers lose tomorrow, the Yankees are already in the next round, and like, so then I can basically be. Then we know the World Series is going to start in either. I guess technically the Rays could knock off Houston Game 5, but it's basically a Houston or New York scenario at that point, and we know the dates, so it's a little more concrete. But yeah, it's like Vince Scully always said, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. So that kind of thing. So. That's where we're at right now. So,
well, we're going to record an episode one way or another sometime in the next week. We'll record really in 36 hours or something. Should the Dodgers hold on and win, we'll have an NLCS preview to you. Otherwise, kind of be on our regular sad schedule next week to kind of break down Game 5 in the series. But I hope that doesn't happen. I will be... in some form watching. I haven't figured out exactly how. I am really, really nervous. Yeah, I really don't want to go down like this.
Yeah, the NL is completely up in the air at this point because the Braves and Cardinals are also in Game 5. That's another great pitching matchup. Jack Flaherty and Mike Moltenevich, they matched up in Game 2, and that was an awesome game. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun. There's three Game 5s in this. And then also the WNBA is also Game 5 on Thursday. So four games five in 2 days. So it's going to be an exciting sports time. So, yeah, we will talk to you around the end of the week at some point. Either way, we're going to recap the NLDS no matter what happened. Either we're going to talk about the upcoming NLCS or what do we do now while these other teams are playing? So. Good luck watching Game 5, everybody. We'll see you then.